Prisoner, attention! You're required for interrogation by the chief of police. Quick march! Prisoner, halt!
Thank you, Constable. You may go. Sit down, please. Now, once again, I must present to you the following confession for your signature. I, having been convicted of conspiracy against the state, do solemnly confess my guilt, and so on and so on. And so, with feelings of shame and disgust, I renounce my crimes, and the only desire I have is to serve our government with all my strength and with the deepest veneration and love for the rest of my life.
Oh, don't put it away. I'll sign it.
You'll sign it? What?
I'll sign it now.
But why?
What do you mean, why? For 10 years you examine me, interrogate me, keep me in prison. Every day for 10 years you give me that form to sign. When I refuse, you threaten me with dreadful punishments and try to talk me around. Finally, I agree to sign so that I can get out of prison and serve the government. And you look surprised and ask me why.
That is so sudden and without warning.
Colonel, I am undergoing a drastic change.
What change?
A drastic change of heart. I don't want to fight the government anymore.
Why not?
I'm fed up with it. If anyone wants to fight the government, let them. I don't know who's going to do it. Spies for a foreign power, perhaps? Secret agents? But not me anymore. I've done my bit.
I'd never have expected this of you. Stop fighting the government, become a conformist. You're a fine one to talk like that, the oldest prisoner in the country.
Exactly, Colonel. Is it true that I am the last man still in prison?
Yes.
You see. Long ago it became obvious to everyone that we have the best political system in the world. My former colleagues confessed their guilt, received their pardon, and went home. Now there's nobody left to arrest. I am the last remaining revolutionary. But what sort of a revolutionary? In my heart of hearts, I'm a stamp collector.
That's what you say now. But who threw the bomb at the general?
Oh, ancient history, Colonel. The bomb didn't even explode. It's not worth raking that up.
Honestly, I can't believe my ears. For 10 years, you've refused to make a statement. You've held out splendidly. Time and time again, you've been ordered to sign, but you never broke down. Instead, you would stand up in disgust and spit at that picture of our infant king and his uncle the regent. May they live forever. We've got used to living here together. Everything's nicely settled, and now suddenly you want to destroy it all.
I tell you, there's just no point. If only I hadn't been so ideologically abandoned, perhaps I could have gone on longer. But to think that the whole population of our beautiful, peaceful, and fertile country has for so long been singing the praises of our infant king and his uncle the regent, may they live forever, that all the prisons are empty, that I alone, just me... No, Colonel, I promise you. I've given up my former beliefs. If the whole people supports the government and is against me, there must be something in it. In fact, we've got a very good government. And that's that.
Yes.
I beg your pardon?
While accepting with sincere joy and satisfaction the prisoner's confession, bearing witness to a change of heart which has come about under the corrective influence of imprisonment, I nevertheless consider it my duty to ascertain to what extent his new, favorable, and entirely rational opinions are deep-rooted and lasting. Why, then, if I may ask, do you consider that our government is good?
Oh, you've got eyes, Colonel. Never before in history has our country reached a high stage of development. You know, sometimes I move my plank bed against the window of my cell. I put my latrine bucket on top of it upside down. I stand on the bucket on tiptoe, and I can see out of the window. There is a most beautiful meadow. Every spring it bursts into flower with different colored blossoms. Then at haymaking time, the farm workers come to the meadow and cut the grass. During the last 10 years, I watched their faces light up with a happiness and satisfaction which grows in strength every year.
Do you realize that it is against the prison rules to look out of the window?
Oh, but for ideological purposes, Colonel, in the name of corrective education. That's not all. On the other side of the meadow, there's a small hill. And on the other side of the hill, during the last 7 years, an industrial building has been constructed. I can see a chimney. And sometimes there's smoke coming out of it.
To be strictly correct, I think I should tell you that that is a crematorium.
Oh, why should they always bury dead people in the ground like they've been doing for centuries and centuries? Don't atheists have the same right as believers to dispose of their bodies in the way they wish, with the sort of funeral they like? Now, what you say only confirms what I've always felt, that that this country of ours is a land of the broadest tolerance, even in religious matters.
Well, yes. You've got to admit it.
You see, I'm right.
I'm a civil servant, and I can't settle this matter myself. That is to say, I can't accept your change of heart too swiftly. I must first of all investigate to see that there are no doubts or hesitations left in your mind. It may be that you're looking at things through rose-tinted spectacles. Take the economic situation, for example. Are you not overlooking certain specialized matters like, say, the railway?
Even the most fanatical enemy of our state system could not deny that the railway, as a phenomenon, exists in this country.
Yes. And as for the people in that picture, I suppose you never had the slightest intention.
I don't understand, Colonel.
Oh, honestly, talking to you, anyone would think you threw a tomato at the general, not a bomb, and that it never entered your head that our regent, may he live forever, the uncle of our infant king, is an idiot.
Colonel?
No, all right, don't worry. Obviously he isn't. That is to say, as far as his intellect is concerned. But you must admit that even the most powerful brains have a little weaknesses lower down. That is, among their habits. Tastes.
What are you laughing at, Colonel?
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. You, an old revolutionary, asking such a question.
It's all this educational effect of prison life that you were talking about. I give you my word, I've simply forgotten what that laugh might mean.
Oh.
Is it some sort of an illusion?
Oh,
is it something unpleasant connected with the persons of our infant king and of his uncle, the regent? That pure old man?
All right, then, very good. As representative of the High Command, I congratulate you on your progress. Let me shake your hand there. But this does not mean that we can give ourselves up to a sudden burst of rejoicing. It is a matter of great concern both to you, having undergone what we hope is a genuine change of heart, and to me, who must not accept your story too trustingly. You say that you do not believe that our regent is a you-know-what. But psychologists tell us that often a man gives the impression that he is not thinking something, while, in fact, he is thinking it all the time. What have you got to say to that?
You're right, Colonel. That's exactly the point. Sometimes it seems to us that we think we are not thinking, but we are thinking, while all the time we are not thinking at all. Thought is a powerful weapon, Colonel.
Yes.
Please believe me. I'm finished with my former mistaken anti-government point of view. There are many reasons for my change of heart. The external reasons are those you've already mentioned. The universal progress that our country has made. You only have to pick up a newspaper to be convinced of that. Look around you, Colonel. Don't bury your head in the sand in the face of these achievements. You've only got to look at your salary, Colonel.
Oh.
That in itself is enough to show how groundless are complaints about this country.
Do go on.
However, I can show you that there are other emotions, internal emotions, which I feel more personally. You see, when I was a child, I had no idea about law and order, about discipline and having an aim in life. All the time, it was freedom and freedom. Well, this sort of monotony in my spiritual diet could only satisfy part of my personality. Feelings of revolt against the established order, a desire to oppose all restrictions and authority, oh, I have plenty of those. But in the course of time, I began to feel a certain dissatisfaction. I came to the conclusion that I was being handicapped. Why is this, I asked myself. Why has fate tormented me, deprived me of the joyful sensation of agreement, subservience and loyalty, the delightful feeling of unity with authority?
Why, indeed?
I was a man unfulfilled, Colonel. But at last I understood that it was even then not too late. At last my first me, rebellious and always complaining, perished as a result of overindulgence. And a second me awoke with a loud voice, demanding the nourishment that was its due. A joyful and calm conformity, an eager hope in the future, and the peace which flows from a full submission to authority.
Hmm. What do you intend to do now?
Well, here I am, the last political prisoner in a country that is now flourishing and entirely loyal. The last dark cloud in the blue sky of the rule of our infant king and his uncle the regent. I am the only reason why they still keep the police force going. If it weren't for me, they could send all the judges and guards off home. The prison would stand empty and could be turned into a preparatory school. You could get out far into the fields and meadows with a gun or a fishing rod and throw off your suffocated uniform. I tell you, Colonel, you've won at last. For the first time in the world's history, the ideal of law and order in a state has been achieved. Today should be a great occasion in your life, Colonel. It is a day of final victory. Today, I sign the paper that you have been trying to persuade me to sign for 10 years. I will go out into the free world and support the government. What is more, I will send an open letter to our infant king and his uncle the regent. The most humble letter that has ever been written, filled with the deepest devotion and love.
You remember that stamp collection you were so proud of?
Yes, what's that got to do with it?
Just reflect for a moment whether you really want to leave us. Perhaps you could think it over once more and strengthen your convictions. Look before you leap, as they say. Meanwhile, we could give you a hand in your stamp collecting. We've got secret agents in many interesting foreign countries who send us reports. We could soak the stamps off and give them to you for your album. Outside, it's not so easy to get good stamps. Yeah. Yes, what is it?
Sir, the sergeant's back.
Tell him to come in.
Come in, Sergeant.
Well, Sergeant, how did you get on? My God, you look a sight. What happened? Go on, tell me.
Sir, in accordance with my duties as agent provocateur, I was shouting anti-government slogans in the street and they beat me up.
Who beat you up? No, you don't really mean that they...
Unfortunately, yes, I was beaten up by the loyal population.
I expected as much.
You see, Colonel, it bears out my theory.
Please don't interfere. Yes. Give me the details, Sergeant.
Sir, immediately upon receiving your instructions, I proceeded to carry them out. First of all, I acquired a civilian suit. Although, if there's one thing I hate, it's civilian clothes. To improve my disguise, I obtained a green hat with a narrow brim and a raincoat. And then I went out into the street. For a short time, I conducted myself defiantly opposite the government office of weights and measures, but nobody paid any attention. So I went to the square and made faces in front of the statue of our infant king and his uncle the regent. May they live forever.
Ooh. Oh.
Again, nobody saw me because you know, Colonel, everybody's in a hurry there. Then I went off and stood in a queue at a kiosk where they were selling beer. I looked around and saw in front of the kiosk and all around me there was a collection of simple, ordinary citizens. About 30 or 38 people were there, more or less. Now this is fine, I thought to myself. The queue moved forward, and all the time, I was wondering what to do about it. At last, I had an idea. And when my turn came round, I said to the man, in my normal voice, 2 half pints, please, in quick succession.
I don't understand.
What? Don't you see? I was pretending that the royal succession had brewed the beer, and that they were giving short measure and that sort of thing.
Ah, yes. Mm.
Well, either he didn't understand, or, well, he looked pretty stupid, or else he didn't want to understand. Anyway, he just asked me, mild or bitter, sir? So then I let him have it straight. I said, our whole farming system's down the drain. And if you don't steal, you'll die of starvation. Then one of them asked me if I was making any allusion to life in the present day, because he was an employee of the state and he would not tolerate the state being insulted.
What did you say then?
Well, I gave him the lot. The agricultural situation, foreign trade, then a few words about the police, especially the secret police. Then a young man in a cloth cap came up out of the group and he walked towards me. You leave our police alone, he says. I suppose next thing you'll start on the army. You'll want to cut down national service and next autumn I'm due to go before the recruiting board. I realised things were hotting up. But you know me, Colonel, I've been in the police since I was a child and this job as agent provocateur, it's something sacred to me.
Yes, yes, of course, yes.
Well, anyway, I didn't pay any attention and went on with all the usual things. The income tax, the health service, and then a lot of stuff about our infant king, may he live forever, and his uncle, the regent. They all shouted, you're one of those, are you? You're going to stand here and slander our beloved rulers. And then they all got together and beat me up.
Bravo, what a fine set of men.
And you know, Colonel, when they were beating me up, there were 2 conflicting feelings in my mind, a feeling of sadness and a feeling of joy. I was sad that I had not carried out your order and that I could not provoke anybody to be disloyal and that once more there's nobody we can arrest. But I was happy that love and reverence for the government and for the persons of our infant king and his uncle the regent are so widespread and strongly felt by the population, as you can tell by my black eye.
Colonel, what the sergeant has said makes me even more convinced. I desire this instant to give up my former ideals that disgust me whatever I think of them. I will now sign the Declaration of Loyalty.
Hey?
Can I have a copy of it, please? And pen and ink.
Is your mind made up, then?
Nothing can alter my decision now. When I leave this building with all its memories and recollections, I shall without delay apply to work for the state.
Yeah, what's that?
Give me the paper, please.
You don't mind about the stamps?
Why should I think about postage stamps when I can join the service of our infant king, may he live forever, and his uncle the regent? The passion of a collector is nothing compared to the spirit of service. Of what use are my stamp albums when I can give myself up to the delights of loyalty, which I've discovered for the first time in my life after such a long phase as an anarchist?
All right, then. I won't press you any more. Here is pen, ink, and paper. If that's what you want, you can have it.
At last.
Yes, sir?
Constable, bring in the prisoner's things.
Oh, yes, sir.
You've disappointed me. I thought you'd hold out longer. It was so impressive the way you never broke down.
Here they are, sir. One cape, one mask, one bomb.
It is my duty to return to you the things that were found on your person at the moment of your arrest.
Ghosts of the past. Oh, no, not the bomb. I finished that forever. Colonel, I'd be so pleased if you would accept this bomb as a present for me and as a souvenir of our happy times together. It can be a mark of the fatherly triumph that you have achieved over me. It is all that remains of the last revolutionary. You can have the mask, too.
Just as you like.
Allow me to congratulate you, Colonel. The last revolutionary is dead. A new citizen has been born. If I were you, I would give my whole staff a 3-day holiday. And why only 3 days? From now on, there will be nothing left for them to do. Goodbye, all. And thank you for everything.
Don't mention it.
Long live our infant king and his uncle regent.
My God. My God.
I wonder if I could provoke him to be disloyal.
Morning.
Oh.
The sergeant at home?
Oh, no. I'm afraid he's not back from work yet.
Not back from work? Today's his day off, isn't it?
He never takes his days off. What did you want to see him about?
Did your husband say when he'd be back?
No. He went into town to do some voluntary provoking. I don't know when he'll be back.
I see. Well, please don't let me interrupt you. You're, sewing, I see.
Oh, yes. It's just some gold braid for my husband's underpants.
Hmm?
He feels so terrible in civilian clothes these days and always likes to wear some tiny piece of military dress, even if it's underneath everything.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel.
Yes?
I wish you'd take him off this job. Don't make him do any more provoking in civilian clothes.
Why not?
Oh, you've no idea how thin and pale he's got since he's had to go about in civvies. He can't exist out of uniform. He's withering away.
I'm afraid that's just too bad, madam. Provoking is always done in civilian dress.
Well, couldn't he just wear his helmet? He always used to feel much better then.
No, madam. A helmet would attract attention.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Oh, it's such a long time since he's had anyone to arrest. He probably doesn't show it in front of you, Colonel. But at home he's become moody and quite intolerable. One new arrest would put him right again.
You can't make arrests without an agent provocateur.
I'm afraid I've just given up hope.
You don't know anyone that we could arrest. Mm. What about your neighbours? Any distant relatives?
Mm, no. No, they're all law-abiding citizens.
Yes.
Here, there was an old man on our street who used to complain.
Oh?
But with him it was the gout, not the government.
Mm. Yes, nowadays it's all so peaceful. All so quiet.
Yes.
Tell me, how did you first meet your husband?
Oh, that was ages ago, Colonel. He reported me to the secret police and I reported him.
Oh.
That's how we got to know each other.
When do you expect your husband home?
He may be back now. He always listens at the doors on his way upstairs. I'll go and have a look.
Colonel.
Ah! Sergeant, you startled me. What do you think you're doing coming in through the window?
I was walking on the tops of the houses. I thought there might be something fishy going on. Anyway, down in the street, it couldn't be quieter.
What did you find?
Nothing at all, Colonel, just a few birds. Is my wife here?
She went out onto the staircase. She thought you were there.
She always listens at the doors when she goes down those stairs. You don't mind if I change now, do you, Colonel? I feel naked without my uniform on.
No, do change if you like. You're in your own home. It's your day off, too.
Yes, I know, but you see, I thought maybe today was going to be my lucky day, so I went out. I did a bit of provoking before lunch, but as usual, it was no good. They just shouted and cheered.
If it hadn't been for you, Sergeant, perhaps we'd never have lived to see this alarming drop in the crime figures. It is thanks to you we now have this perfect state of law and order. I must recommend you for promotion.
Oh, it's nothing, Colonel. I just felt I had to go and try once more. I like doing it, really. What a relief to be back in uniform. At last I can relax.
Yes, Sergeant. Now, I've got an important matter to discuss with you.
Yes, sir?
Find some excuse to send your wife off. She mustn't come in here. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she's quite reliable, but what I have to talk to you about is most secret.
Oh, right, sir. My dear, would you come here a minute?
Yes, Winston.
I want you to go out and get some...
Go out.
Now, come on. Off you go. I sent her off to get some waterproof glue.
Couldn't you think of a better excuse than that?
It wasn't an excuse, Colonel. I really need it. My raincoat got torn last time they beat me up.
Oh, well, that's all right, then. Has she gone far?
She won't be back for 3/4 of an hour.
I suppose you're surprised by my visit.
Yes, sir. Chief of Police here in my house. I'd sooner have expected a revolution.
No wishful thinking now, Sergeant.
Oh.
Anyway, a keen sergeant must always be prepared for a revolution. Now, I didn't really mean that. Your service record is irreproachable.
But of course, Colonel.
Still, in your exemplary conduct, there is something more than ordinary conscientiousness and sense of duty. Sit down, please.
Thank you, sir.
As I said, you are not only an excellent policeman. I have found that you are something more than that.
Sir.
I find that you've given me an idea.
Yes, sir.
You put on civilian clothes, do you not, when your job requires it, even though you can't stand wearing them?
Yes, sir. Anything for my job, sir.
Exactly. In other words, you sacrifice your personal likes and dislikes on the altar of service to the state.
Sir.
But that's not important. In examining your case, I've come to the conclusion that your keenness, readiness, and devotion to duty are quite out of proportion with the tasks you fulfill so admirably.
Yes, sir.
You give me the impression of a Hercules who spends his time cutting wood and carrying water.
I beg pardon, sir?
Of course, that sort of work is difficult and useful, but it is not the work of a Hercules. In you there is a strength, Sergeant, a strength which is only partly finding its outlet in ordinary work. For you are something more than a civil servant. You are inspired by the idea of order and general discipline. You are the mystic of the police force, the saint of the police. Now, listen carefully to what I say.
Yes, sir.
Do you realize that we shall never have the chance to arrest anyone again?
What did you say,
sir? I'll tell you something else. Not only will we never arrest anyone ever again, but your son, your grandson, and your great-grandson, they won't arrest anyone either.
Oh, no.
The whole police force is standing on the edge of a precipice. What is the function of a policeman? It is to arrest those who offend against the existing order. But suppose there aren't any people like that left. Suppose that as a result of the operations of our improved and reconstituted police force, the last trace of rebelliousness in our people has disappeared, and that they have become universally enthusiastic for the regime. Suppose that they have formed once and for all a permanent love for our infant king and his uncle the regent. What is there for the police to do then?
Oh, Colonel, I feel ill.
For a long time I've been expecting and dreading the moment which has now arrived. Our last political prisoner has just signed the Act of Allegiance, has been released from prison, and has begun to serve our infant king and his uncle the regent. I tried to keep him back. I promised him stamps for his collection. It was no good. Do you know what this means? Mm-hmm. It means that we have beautiful prisons constructed at great expense. We have a highly trained, devoted staff. We have courtrooms, offices, and card indexes. And we now have not one single prisoner, not one single suspect, not one single clue to follow up. People have become wildly, cruelly, bestially loyal.
That's true, Colonel. That's a fact.
Soon the time will come when we'll have to take off our uniforms.
Oh, sir.
And then you'll toss and turn in bed at nights, longing hopelessly for one little interrogation. Your gold braid sewn onto your underpants won't be much good to you then. Already you're suffering from insomnia, and for the moment you've still got your job. Think what it'll be like soon.
Oh, no,
but
no.
Yes, yes. They'll take away your uniform. They'll give you some sort of sports jacket, walking shoes, and a pair of flannels. You'll be able to go out into the fields or into the water with a fishing rod or a shotgun, if you like. You'll be able to arrest hares and sparrows, so long as it isn't the mating season.
Is there nothing we can do, Colonel?
I have come to you not only in my capacity as chief of police, not only as your superior officer. At this dreadful time, we are both of us just simple constables. In the face of the ruin which is facing our life's work, we must give each other our hands and offer brotherly advice for its solution. And now listen to me. A man who can even now save the situation is you.
Me?
Yes, you. Pay attention to what I'm saying. What do we need? What we need is one person who we could lock up, who we could arrest for something which could in some very slight degree be described as anti-government activity. Having several times attempted to find this man, it has become apparent that we shall not find him in the ordinary course of events. We must, so to speak, compose this man ourselves. My choice has fallen on you.
I don't understand, sir.
What don't you understand?
What I have to do.
Exactly the same as you've been doing all along. Shout something against the government, but with this difference. This time we won't let you off. We'll lock you up.
Me?
Yes, you. We'll open the window so that they can hear you better from the street. Then you can stand by the window and shout out something as loud as you can against our infant king and his uncle the regent. May they live forever. Then I'll draw my sword, arrest you, and that's that.
My God, but I'm supposed to be a policeman.
You are more a policeman than anyone else in the world. To be a member of the police and to pretend to others that you're not a policeman, that makes you really a double policeman. But to be a policeman and to pretend to yourself that you're not a policeman, that makes you a policeman deep down, luxuriously, in the depths of your heart. We might say that you're a super policeman, unlike any other policeman, even a double police policeman.
I see, sir.
Before today is out, I shall send a report to the general. Tomorrow morning, our infant king, his uncle the regent, will be informed that we have discovered and arrested a revolutionary. We shall be saved.
What do I have to shout?
You choose.
Shall I say that our regent, the uncle of our infant king, is a swine?
That's not direct enough. It must be something strong and forceful, with no understatement, so that I can arrest you 100%.
Oh, well, then, what about a dirty swine?
That's much better. Open the window.
Yes, sir.
Now, one, two...
Just a minute. There's a bit of dust on my uniform. Right, now...
One, two, three.
Our regent, the uncle of our infant king, is a dirty swine.
How's that, sir?
I arrest you in the name of our infant king and his uncle the regent.
Good heavens. Still trying to provoke people. Can't you take a rest?
Silence, woman, this time at last. He's made a success of it. So, Sergeant, you've been trying to saw through the bars of your cell window. And you kicked one of the warders. This is the second time it's happened.
I don't know what's come over me, really, Colonel.
Is there anything you need?
No, thank you.
Still, you look as if there's plenty you need. You're so pale and silent.
Well, maybe that's because I'm locked up in prison, sir.
Every day I send reports about you to the General. Thanks to you, we've been granted funds for rebuilding the prison, recruiting new personnel and strengthening the patrols. The General has become personally interested in your case. He says that you're a very dangerous man, and that it's extremely fortunate I got you in time. Ha! I don't look so glum. If I didn't know you better, I think all this was depressing you. The General says that today he will attend your interrogation in person. Are you ill? Aren't you sleeping properly?
Not very well.
Would you like a drink?
Oh, yes, please, sir.
There you are.
Thank you, sir. Colonel, I mustn't drink with you.
Why not?
Because I'm just an ordinary... Colonel, can you tell me, what am I?
What a question. You're yourself.
But what does that mean, Colonel, I'm myself? I just don't know what I am now, a policeman or a prisoner. And another thing, if I'm a policeman, am I myself? Or if I'm a prisoner, am I myself? And since I must be myself, am I a policeman or a prisoner?
I explained all this to you at the time of your arrest. Why start all over again?
Oh, it is all quite clear then, sir, because that was just at the beginning and I still knew what I was, an ordinary police sergeant in the Secret Service. Things really started to go wrong earlier when I was working as an agent provocateur. If I'd known at that time, I'd have asked you to put someone else on this provoking job. It just wasn't an idle whim that I was so upset at having to wear civvies. A policeman should never take off his uniform under any circumstances.
Still, it never entered your head to make a complaint. And when it was your day off, you went out to work of your own free will.
But, sir, it wasn't anything like as bad as it is now. It only really began to get bad when you arrested me and I started my time in prison. Prison has a terrible effect on a man, sir. From the moment I was arrested, everything started getting more and more confused.
What do you mean?
Well, sir, to start with, I remembered everything just as you explained it to me. Then I began to have attacks and blackouts. Well, I got frightened. I started repeating to myself over and over again, I am a sergeant in the Secret Service. I am a sergeant in the Secret Service. Or rather, the top Secret Service. But then it...
What happened then?
Well, then I stopped repeating it. I didn't see the sense. And it reached the point, Colonel, when... Oh, anyway, what I meant was that I'm just an ordinary...
An ordinary what, damn it?
Well, either an ordinary policeman or an ordinary prisoner, whichever I am.
Why do we have to bring out these stupid, childish arguments? This is what comes of giving responsible jobs to people with no higher education. In your place, a man with any intelligence...
Oh, what I was going to say was that whichever of the two I am, I do not think that I should drink with you. If I'm a policeman, then I cannot condone your drinking with a prisoner. That is to say, with me, because I am, in fact, under arrest. And if I'm a prisoner, a revolutionary, feared by the general himself and by the government of the country, there again, I should not drink with you.
Why not?
Because if I'm a prisoner, I must conduct myself according to the moral code of an imprisoned revolutionary. And I cannot drink with the chief of police, a representative of authority.
Have you gone mad?
No, Colonel, this is something stronger than me. Are you in a position to release me from prison? No, you are not. So I've got to stay in prison. And if I have to stay in prison, the effect of that environment on me becomes stronger and stronger. I've tried to fight it, but I feel that every day I spend in prison does something horrible to me. Something I can't quite understand.
Maybe you are ill.
No, it's not that, Colonel. I couldn't be more healthy. This is something quite different. Do you know that since the time that you arrested me, I've started to develop certain new ideas?
Be careful what you say.
No, sir, I want you to know about it. For example, before this, I used to travel quite often by train. And I never thought anything particular about it. But when a man's in prison, he begins to think much more critical. And you know what I've decided?
How should I know? Tell me at once.
That our railway system is atrocious.
Do you realize what you're saying? I warn you, I shall have to write this down.
Do make a report, sir, please. This sort of thing gets a hold of a man and... He just can't stay silent any longer. Take art and culture, for example. Will you tell me, Colonel, why did we have to torment and persecute those poor artists?
A little slower, please. What were those last two words?
I said those poor artists.
Poor artists. Right. No, I don't believe it. You, with your record of loyal service, do you really hold these opinions?
Yes.
We've worked together for so many years. Everything's always gone smoothly. And all the time you were... Do you really think that things are so bad in this country? Think it over.
What is there to think over? Now, listen. If I move my plank bed against the wall, put the bucket on it upside down and stand on it, I can see out of the window of my cell. There's a field there, and just now it's full of farmers, because it's harvest time. When I examine them closely, I can't help thinking... I wish you could see it, sir. What sour expressions they've got on their faces. The general dissatisfaction that's painted on them.
This is an entirely subjective outlook on your part. Quite apart from the conclusions to which it leads, whether they're loyal or disloyal, subjectivism as a method is entirely opposed to our party program. I would have had to punish you even if you hadn't mentioned this so-called dissatisfaction. And besides, it's against the rules to look out of the window.
But not for somebody who's fighting against the government, Colonel. Someone like that would not deprive himself of any trivial little act of rebellion. On the contrary, he would consider it part of his duty to bring his mission to fulfillment, not to mention the satisfaction. And another thing, when I look out of the window, I can see a newly built crematorium on the other side of the field, and that also gives me food for thought. It is a non-productive investment.
Would you deny atheists the right to dispose of their bodies as they like, with their own sort of funeral? If you're against religious tolerance, how can you have the nerve to criticize the government's record in that
respect?
Those
people are dead and your argument is not valid. And even if I hadn't looked out of the window, there are writings scratched on the walls in my cell. A man sits there with nothing to do, so he reads. Some of them make you think. They aren't so stupid.
What, for instance?
Down with tyranny, Colonel.
So, that's the way it is. It's reached that stage. And I suppose our regent may live forever. The uncle of our infant king, may he live forever, is an idiot.
I'm afraid so, Colonel.
Talk! Yes, come in.
Sir, the general's arrived, sir.
The general.
And the lieutenant with him.
Oh, my God.
Ah, gentlemen, please come in.
Sir, This is the man.
Yes, sir, that's him.
He looks to me like the ringleader. Have you managed to find the rest of his gang?
Not yet, sir, but we're hunting them down systematically.
Ah, dangerous bird. Did you find any explosive materials on him?
Not so far, sir, but we haven't given up hope.
He's more dangerous than I thought. He's dishonest. Good, straightforward revolutionaries always have a couple of pounds of dynamite on them. It looks to me as if we've caught their key man. What do you think, Clifton?
I agree, sir. If he's been searched and nothing's been found at him, it means there's more to this than meets the eye.
Colonel, allow me to present to you my ADC. I've just chosen him as my special advisor on revolutionary affairs and anti-government activity. He's an expert on that subject.
Sir, no, it's impossible, sir.
What's the matter with you?
Your Excellency, you must allow me to speak, sir. You've become the victim of a mistake, sir, or of a deliberate trick. This man...
Speak up, man.
He was the one who threw the bomb at you, sir.
Who?
Your present assistant and my former prisoner.
Yes, Colonel, please continue.
I swear to you, sir, I'm not mistaken. I know him well. For 10 years I used to interrogate him here in my office on this chair, sir. It is impossible that Your Excellency should have such an assistant.
What have you got to say, Lieutenant?
Oh, the Colonel's right, of course. I am his former prisoner. But you seem to have forgotten, Colonel, that I signed the Act of Allegiance and was released. His Excellency is perfectly well aware of all this.
But I know he signed the Act of Allegiance.
Calm yourself, Colonel. I knew it all along, and you can see that if I introduce the Lieutenant as an expert in matters concerning the fight against subversive activity, it is not without justification.
But the bomb! The bomb! I've still got it in my drawer.
My dear Colonel, everybody sometime has to throw some bomb at some general or other. The organism of the body demands it. The sooner you get it over, the better. As for me, I have complete confidence in my new assistant, precisely because he has all this behind him. There are so many people who are still not satisfied this natural urge. You mustn't be angry if I ask you, Colonel, but have you ever thrown a bomb at a general?
Your Excellency.
You see? Neither have I. And therefore, if you'll forgive my saying so, I have more confidence in my assistant than I have in you, or even in myself. I promise you, Colonel, that if you want to be thought of as the ideal chief of police, part of your job should consist of taking precautions in case I should throw a bomb at myself. Have you thought about that?
No, sir.
You should think about it. The person of a general is the property of the state and the government. Not of the individual who holds the rank. So any attempt of this sort, even on my part, must be considered an attack against the uniform of an officer, and so, indirectly, against the state. And if ever you should have to arrest me on this account, I trust you will remember that it was me that reported myself to you and brought this vital information to the notice of the chief of police. And in my trial, this will be considered an extenuating circumstance. That is the situation.
Yes. Quite so, sir.
To revert to our discussion of the lieutenant, I will tell you something else. He entered the service not long ago and came to us from a situation that was, I need hardly tell you, extremely different from our own. Already, he has achieved the rank of an officer. This requires some effort, as you can imagine. We must congratulate him on his keenness and hard work. Here we, Colonel... of the old guard, and have acquired our qualities of loyalty little by little. In him, a love for the government has exploded suddenly, fresh and pure, and concentrated by his long years of anti-government activities. As regards his qualifications for this present job, I can assure you that he is second to none in combating these same activities. Therefore, in expressing your dislike of him, you lay yourself open to the charge, groundless, I'm sure, of being jealous of him because of his lightning success.
I can promise you, sir.
And all right, don't worry. I brought him here specially because I knew we had a tricky case on our hands with this enemy of our infant king and his uncle, the regent. Yes, it'll be quite a business, you can be sure. Shall we begin? Proceed, Lieutenant, if you please.
Allow me to suggest...
What, you again? You ought to be ashamed of yourself. This aversion of yours towards our young people is beginning to look suspicious.
I'm afraid you're going to be disappointed, Your Excellency. Both you and the Chief of Police. The matter will be quite short and simple.
Oh, you think so, do you?
I agree with the Colonel that you are overestimating the simplicity of the case. We know that as a result of the accused's incredible treachery and low cunning, we have no evidence of any substance against him. The extent of his subversive activity is borne out by his outburst concerning our regent, the uncle of our infant king, the outburst which immediately unmasked the criminal and became the grounds for his summary arrest. And if the criminal shouted out things like that at the top of his voice, how much more terrible must be the things that he's been carrying on in silence? Still, we do not possess the materials that would enable us to discover what the criminal has done. I need only mention the fact that no explosives were found on him. On what ground, then, do you consider that the case is short and simple?
I do not intend at this moment to point to the hostile acts which the prisoner has committed openly. But I can state quite categorically that such acts are to be found lurking in their full basis in the personality of the accused. And that even if they have not yet been carried out, they exist with the same reality as if they had been carried out. For we know, do we not, that time is one, and that it is not to be divided into time past and time present. And from the point of view of the investigation, it is the most clear and damning truth.
If you will allow me, General, two words.
But, of course, please.
I do not deny that we have to deal with an exceptionally dangerous criminal, and that those who have been claiming that the police have nothing to do deserve to be pitted, if not actually arrested. It seems to me, though, that the method employed by my colleague, the lieutenant, is the sign of an engaging, though perhaps over-rash, belief in his own abilities, typical of the inexperienced.
Colonel,
As far as I know, the criminal began his unusually intensive enemy activity after a long period of loyalty and even of cooperation with the government.
That is so, my young friend.
Well, we have then to deal with an exceptionally dangerous individual. It is a process analogical with the one which you, General, were so kind as to outline a moment ago when you were evaluating my career.
Yes.
That is to say, a process of contrary direction.
Indeed.
This man, at a comparatively late age, which leads to a sharpening of the symptoms, achieved his first sensual pleasures with the feeling that he was being persecuted. As you know, this feeling gives one an illusion of one's own importance and dignity. The same, in fact, in intensity, as the feeling of God-fearing loyalty and agreement with the prevailing viewpoints, although entirely different from it in its detail, of course. And this is why it is so extraordinarily attractive to people who have not yet experienced it.
I do not agree. This man is an abominable sort of criminal, that is obvious. But I do not see in what way he is worse than other such people who throw bombs at generals.
That damn bomb again.
I can assure you, Colonel, that this man is capable, without batting an eyelid, of throwing a bomb at three generals.
Prisoner, attention. Sir. Speak up now. Would you throw a bomb at the general?
Answer frankly and truthfully, Sergeant. Don't take any notice of me.
Well, no, sir. Of course, I might have a few strange ideas, I admit, about the railways and agriculture and things like that, but to throw a bomb at the general...
You see, gentlemen...
Imagine that you are taking a stroll on Sunday afternoon, and it so happens that you have a bomb with you.
Yes,
you've taken it from your house, though you don't quite know why. Yes. Oh, all around you there are people, beautiful women, and suddenly you see a general.
A real one?
Behave yourself, Sergeant.
Right. Now, the general is walking straight towards you.
Yes, sir.
He doesn't turn aside, but keeps on walking straight.
Yes.
His medals are sparkling.
Yes.
His jackboots are shining.
Yes.
You feel that now you can pay him back for everything and that such a beautiful general won't come your way a second time?
For the last time, Sergeant.
Well.
No, I can't.
I hope you're satisfied, General.
To be quite frank, I am beginning to wonder why you are obstructing the investigation.
Me? Obstructing the investigation, me?
That's how it looks to me. How important is it to you that nothing should be proved against this man?
I protest.
It seems clear to me that you're trying to hinder my assistant in his final unmasking of the criminal, in his laying bare of the full baseness of the man. I warn you that I may feel it my duty to discuss your position with the regent, the uncle of our infant king.
And for my part, I should like to inform His Excellency that I possess adequate means to demonstrate to His Excellency the unprofitability of this sort of interference.
Are you threatening me?
I would not presume to do so, sir. I merely state that I am washing my hands of it, and that I will accept no responsibility for the further development of the matter in hand.
Very well. We shall return to our interrogation.
Thank you, sir. May I ask that the prisoner be removed for a moment?
Oh, certainly. Colonel, will you just...
Constable, take him out into the corridor. Bring him back when I ring.
Yes, sir. Come on, this way.
I still maintain that basically the accused is guilty of a bomb attack on the general. The problem is simply that he is a man of low intelligence and has too little imagination. But I have a plan.
We are listening.
In the colonel's desk, there is a bomb. The same one that at a certain time in the past, I threw at the general. Oh, the bomb doesn't work. The best proof of which is the fact that the general is still here among us. I propose that we call the suspect in and give him this bomb. We will open the door. The general will go out into the corridor. And then I guarantee that when he has the bomb in his hands and sees the general standing opposite him, all his libertarian and anarchist instincts will be aroused. Unable to resist them any longer, he throws the bomb. In this way, we will acquire a dazzlingly clear proof of his extreme evil intentions and crimes in conditions as closely as possible approaching the natural.
But this is madness. What do you think about it, Colonel?
I think, sir, that your assistant, your chosen expert on these questions, and an officer of great promise in spite of his short record of service, is quite right. You should not lightly reject the idea of this experiment, General, and obstruct the investigation.
I repeat, the bomb is harmless. The detonator didn't make contact. At least last time it didn't.
So, Lieutenant, you think...
I am carrying out my duty and suggesting what I consider to be the most effective means of unearthing anti-government activities. I am an officer in the service of our infant king and his uncle the regent. May they live forever.
Well, I think you may be a little bit too smart, young man.
As a friend of yours, General, I would not advise any slackness in your conduct of this investigation. I may tell you in confidence that in the reports which I send direct to the regent, the uncle of our infant king, I shall be forced to describe in detail your relationship and attitude towards the police service, and in particular, your enthusiasm for unmasking the enemies of our infant king and his uncle the regent.
Show me the bomb. I must think.
Yes, it's the same bomb.
Definitely.
Quite definitely.
Well then, General, do you agree?
Are you suggesting, Colonel, that I'm being uncooperative? Please explain the situation to the prisoner.
Constable, bring in the prisoner.
Yes, sir. Come on, prisoner, this way.
You can go, Constable.
Yes, sir.
Prisoner.
Sir?
You are going to throw this bomb at the general.
What? Just like that?
The general will stand in the corridor, and you will be in here.
Can't we put it off until tomorrow?
Just as you like, General. Shall we consult the opinion of the government on the matter?
No. I'm going...
Now, you hold it like this.
Just a moment. General.
What?
Leave the door open, please. Otherwise, he can't throw the bomb at you.
Oh, of course.
Thank you. Now, give the prisoner my mask. It should be in there in the drawer with the bomb. The illusion must be complete.
Ready. Right, Lieutenant. Over to you.
Okay. Now you're strolling along.
Yes.
Beautiful women.
Yes, sir.
Over here where the colonel is standing, the sun is blazing in the sky.
Yes.
And there is a general.
Yes, sir.
His medals are sparkling. Yes. His jack boots are shining.
Yes, sir.
And now you think to yourself, at last you're paying back for everything.
Yes, sir.
You can see the general.
No!
I suppose you like the general. As your superior officer, he always treated you with great courtesy.
Quite the opposite of the way in which he treated you. He seemed to ignore the fact that you have been the chief of police for years and years.
What would you say if I were to place you under arrest? You must admit this little matter of the bomb is, to say the least, doubtful.
Yes, I have to admit that. Doubtful to the extent that your part in it is extremely obscure. In that case, we will find ourselves in the curious situation of mutual arrest.
Young man, you will go far, but not so far as you think, and not towards my position, that of chief of police, but in precisely the opposite direction. I arrest you.
Fine. I'm afraid, though, that by acting in this way, you brought your career to a very sharp close. I must point out, sir, that your laughable attempts to charge me with the bomb attack can only turn themselves automatically to your disfavor.
And why should that be, my friend?
Very simply, old boy. You are accusing me of opposing the government and of attempted murder. They will ask you where you were when that certain lieutenant signed the Act of Allegiance and was released from prison. What sort of a chief of police would you be if the meanest convicted prisoner was able to pull the wool over your eyes? What sort of a security officer were you if you failed to spot his little game and simply released him from custody? And if you argue that you are right to release me because my repentance is genuine, you would be quite correct, since I really was and am sincere in my loyalty and entirely devoted to the government. However, in this way, you would bring to nothing your accusation against me of attempted murder and would place yourself in the ludicrous situation of a squalid intriguer. But to return to the point, what would you say if I were to arrest you?
Please do not think that the police are above arrest. On the contrary, arrest is above us. It is above everything. I am a policeman with a long record of service, so if you think that you can establish a case...
Of course I can. Now, this is how I see the situation. One of the most elementary duties of the head of the police is to protect generals against attacks by bombs. And what did you do? You personally pressed the bomb into the hands of the arrested revolutionary. You personally showed him how to throw it. It's frightful.
Have you gone mad? The whole thing was your suggestion.
Which you adopted with suspicious eagerness.
But only under pressure from you. It was you who wanted to do it. It was you who were so keen on that experiment with the bomb.
But I am not the head of the police. I repeat, what is the most elementary duty of the chief of police? Any fool will tell you. To protect generals against bomb attacks.
But the bomb ought never to have gone off. You told me yourself it was useless.
I've got nothing to do with it. You had no right to believe me.
And you assured me a moment ago that you were speaking the truth and that you're loyal to the government.
That is correct. I am loyal to the government. But you, as the chief of police, ought to know that the fact that something is correct doesn't necessarily have any special meaning. It can eventually have, or perhaps does have, an opposite meaning, depending on certain circumstances. You see, in spite of your record of long service, you can only understand the most primitive arguments.
All right. We will remain under mutual arrest until the situation is cleared up.
Oh, thank God.
General, you're alive.
I'm not such a fool. I went and hid in the lavatory.
I must point out that the chief of police outburst a moment ago must be considered as extremely incriminating. The astonishment expressed in the sentence of, General, you're alive, shows that the chief of police was expecting, if not actually counting, on something else.
I'm afraid that I am forced to arrest both of you. There are two possibilities. Either it was an accident, or else one of you three wound up the detonator. Unfortunately, even we are not yet able to arrest accidents, so there remains the second possibility. The prisoner doesn't count because he is already under arrest.
Thank you, sir.
So I am left with you, two gentlemen.
Precisely. The lieutenant's past record will doubtless give the tribunal plenty to think about.
The members of the Court of Inquiry will doubtless see the chief of police's motives as a classic example of their type. Leaving aside for the moment the real, more serious charges that he must face, I imagine that he intends to compromise the general's assistance. It is an understandable desire, but it arises from feelings that are purely personal and have nothing in common with the service of our government.
I regret to inform you, General, that in the name of this government of yours, I must place you under arrest.
Me? What for?
For irresponsibly exposing the uniform of a general to attacks by bombs. You are under suspicion of condoning subversive conduct. It was you who aroused my sense of duty in this matter, and that will be regarded as mitigating circumstance at your trial.
We still haven't sorted out the question of whether a policeman who has arrested an individual with whom he finds himself in a state of mutual arrest, like the chief of police is with me, is able to arrest a third individual by whom he was at some time previously arrested, together with the first individual to whom he is united by the first double action of arrest.
Persons under arrest are not permitted to express an opinion.
The same to you, Colonel.
It looks, gentlemen, as if the police now have plenty of work on their hands.
You're mad. You're mad. Long live...